Here we are on the north side of 83rd Avenue between 103rd and 104th Street. To the left, you got your ATB Park. Then, if you look past the beer tent, you got your Fireman's Memorial statue butted up against Walterdale Theater. And then you got the barns, be they bus or be they arts, an impressive structure that takes up the entire block. Way back in the middle of the 20th century, this building is definitely a bus barns for diesel, trolley, what have you. And it remains that way for over three decades. Then, in the mid-80s, the buses pull out for good and the old Strathcona Farmers Market moves in. Of course, they can only utilize a portion of the building, and their neighbors across the street can't stand to see all that space going to waste. By 1986, fringe venues crop up in various corners of the cavernous building. Bus barns north, bus barns west, bus barns south, and there are several tiers of abandoned offices in the building too, which sing their siren songs to Judy Tyler Moore.
I have an idea.
To secure the long-term survival of the Fringe, Chinook Theatre presents a business plan to the city for a 20-year lease on half of the city-owned building. The purpose of the proposal? To transform the rundown bus barns into a brand spanking new multi-use arts and culture center. The city goes for it, and the $1 a year lease is signed. While all this is going on, BYOVs continue to grow in popularity, spreading throughout the neighborhood and beyond.
Dead Slow is a stylish murder mystery performed in the Renford Inn on White parking garage. The audience is seated in the actual garage. The actors drive in, do their scenes, and drive out again. The lead actor has to learn to drive standard, and during one performance, she almost backs over the audience. Who can forget Confessions of a Nude Model at the Sunflower Gallery? You guessed it, our lead actor is naked. The audience is handed sketch pads and encouraged to do some sketching as the show proceeds. Back then, a fringe ticket is $7. However, the program states that if you attend this show in the nude, admission is only $1. At the time, a struggling student and future Fringe Festival director is strapped for cash. He takes the discount and opts to watch the show in the buff. Talk about pulling focus from the star.
It's 1995, and Fringe Festival director Judy Tyler Moore now serves as Executive Director of Programming and Development, and Chinook Theatre renames itself Fringe Theatre Adventures.
To better reflect its wide-ranging activities and adventurous spirit.
Oh, and the old Strathcona Bus Barns becomes the Arts Barns, at least the Fringe's half of it anyway.
In the earliest days of the Fringe, applications are strictly first come, first served. Whatever application makes it through the door before the deadline is in. Places of origin are not really considered. Eventually, it is decided that this gives local applicants an unfair advantage, so a quota system is put in place. Suddenly, there are limited spots available for a substantial pool of local talent. Due to this new quota system, the first overnight lineup for fringe slots occurs in December 1993. Applicants begin lining up on a cold Sunday night in order to have their applications processed at 9 a.m. Monday morning. They are allowed to spend the night in the bus barn's wash bay, huddled together for warmth. Very Les Mis. The next year, the same thing, only this time it's two nights. This campout becomes a regrettable but regular tradition. Until Fringe applicants are forced to line up 4 days before applications are scheduled to be processed. An overzealous individual pitches a tent in front of the Arts Barns in order to be the first in line, and no amount of discouragement will send him away. From this point on, all future Fringe applications are done via lottery. One year, a large jar is filled with Smarties to represent how many volunteers the Fringe has acquired. A hungry volunteer doing clerical work in the office opens the jar and eats all the Fringe volunteers.
In the early years of the Fringe, there are always street dances held the night before the festival begins. Alberta's own Katie Lang headlines one of these dances. Other street dance performers include Moxie Fruvis and Sarah McLaughlin. One year, it is announced that Crash Test Dummies will be appearing, mistaking the early 90s rock band for the full-scale anthropomorphic test devices used to measure human injuries in traffic accidents. A panic-stricken Judy Tyler Moore says,
"Crash Test Dummies? Where are we gonna put them?"
In 1992, former A-list movie star Elliot Gould, Trapper John in the original MASH movie, and Ross and Monica's dad on Friends, is in Edmonton appearing at the Mayfield Dinner Theater. He spends his off hours reading stories to children at the Kids Fringe and taking in numerous Fringe plays.
Since we're name-dropping, before he heads off to Hollywood, Nathan Fillion, star of The Rookie, Castle, and Saving Private Ryan, appears in at least two Fringe plays, The Maltese Bodkin and The Reluctant Resurrection of Sherlock Holmes. Then he gets the hell out of Dodge.
In 1998, Judy Tyler Moore tosses her hat in the air one last time and hands over the executive director reins to Daryl Lindenbach, henceforth referred to as Big D Double R.
I'm here. Let the games begin.
In his 5 years with Fringe Theater, Big D Double R reinvents the Fringe Theater School, reinvigorates theater for young audiences, and creates Imagine, a summer arts program for youth from across Western Canada.
Hey, what can I tell you? It's a gift.
But renovations to the arts barns take up the lion's share of his time.
The early bus barns were every artist's dream. Blank canvas between concrete columns. Endless opportunities for art. But it's also endless maintenance and massively expensive, too.
In 2000, Fringe Theater Adventures unveils its $8.5 million fundraising plans to gut the existing 49-year-old arts barns and replace it with a slick, multi-purpose community space. The plans are met with excitement and some hesitation.
Ugh, don't get me started. The naysayers are crying, but it won't be the same if we renovate it. Meanwhile, they're standing in front of massive cracks in the walls, peeling paint, leaking pipes, and mounds of never-ending dust.
Once the company clears the many hurdles, the long-planned renovations begin. A substantial amount of the now 51-year-old building is demolished to make way for the new theater complex. Fringe staff box up decades of memories and relocate across town, camping out in Queen Mary Park School. The contractors have only 10 months available to complete the entire project.
Look, there is no room for error here. We're walking on a tightrope. One slip and it is game over. Did I mention you're all doing a hell of a job? Props to you.
In the late spring of 2003, the staff received the keys to their new home, an $8.5 million theater complex completed just in time for Attack of the Killer Fringe. New offices, studios, a shop for building sets, a spacious lobby and box office, dressing rooms, and the Westbury, a new multi-form theater, make up the shiny new building. The glass on the doors by the admin office is so pristine that a well-known critic from Global TV walks right into it, leaving a shroud of Turin-like faceprint on the glass. They're shiny, and then they're shiny. With his mission accomplished, Big D Double R departs to cultivate new challenges.
And that's what they call a wrap. Think of me. Think of me fondly.
Let's go, Fringer. Head north. We're going to carry on now to the backstage theater. Keep walking till you come to the big alleyway to your left. Stop at the brightly colored mural with the ghost and the candle, a beautiful piece recently painted for us by Next Fest artist Haley Fortin. Are you there? Great. Press play now on part 4.